We've been listening to President-elect Joe Biden as he's been announcing his team to head the Justice Department in his incoming administration. At the very top of that, Judge Merrick Garland, who will head the Department of Justice, provided he is confirmed by the U.S. Senate coming up once Joe Biden takes over the presidency. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC Pasadena, 89.1 KUOR Redlands, 90.3 KVLA Coachella, and 89.5 KJAI Ojai. Very good to have you with us. Last hour, our statewide news special from our friends at KQED NPR member station in San Francisco. We have much to talk about on today's Air Talk. The very latest from D.C., political reporter at the Washington Post, Amber Phillips, joins us. Amber, thank you so much. We're awaiting Nancy Pelosi, who's going to be speaking momentarily. And I understand that she is expected to comment about potential invocation of the 25th Amendment.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, I believe as we were waiting, she took to the press pool area in the United States Capitol, and she did join the top Senate Democrat, Chuck Schumer, in calling for the 25th Amendment to remove him from office. And if that didn't happen, she said Congress may be forced to move forward with impeachment. That's a direct quote. My colleagues are reporting from out of that room from her. That's pretty big news, although I don't see how that like actually gets the majority of Congress to kick the president out of office.
Well, you'd have to have two-thirds of Congress that would support an invocation of the 25th Amendment. A little bit later this hour, we're going to talk about the legal issues that are raised, as well as whether a second impeachment would be pursued by the House of Representatives. But Amber, as you mentioned, Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi now taking this position, but there's one fewer members of the cabinet to potentially invoke the 25th Amendment. Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao, married to the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, has announced that she's going to be leaving, essentially in protest.
Right. Yeah, she's resigning, and she is probably the bold-faced name so far in the Trump administration, White House, or cabinet level to resign. But I think you're exactly right. The impact of that suggests that the 25th Amendment isn't something that is being taken seriously right now this afternoon among cabinet members. You know, my White House colleagues at the Washington Post had been reporting that they were talking about it. We don't know who nor how many, but there were cabinet members talking about removing the president from office this way, which is remarkable. But their sources stressed the talks were preliminary. And you know, I think that suggested it could have faded by now. And then we see Secretary Chao resign in protest, which suggests to me that, like, there's not a mechanism for people like her who want to, as her resignation suggests, hold the president accountable within staying within the administration.
Amber, before I let you go, what sorts of repercussions is this creating within the Republican Party? Last night, late at night, we had the joint session of the House and Senate do the final acceptance of the Electoral College votes on a state-by-state basis. They finished up on the challenge to Arizona. There was a Pennsylvania challenge. They went to their separate houses to debate. There were still some Republican members of the House who were making their arguments about not accepting the electoral votes, particularly from Pennsylvania. So, you know, at this point, where is the party at with this sharp division?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And I don't want to dodge it by saying it's tough to answer, but I'll say that it's tough to answer in part because the divisions within the party right now feel irreconcilable. And you get that sense from Republican leaders in Congress, particularly in the Senate, who aren't calling for these people to be, like, kicked out or even censored or maybe kicked off their committees. There just isn't talk of that I'm hearing, because this goes deeper than the more than 100 House Republicans and at least half a dozen Senate Republicans who voted to override the will of voters last night. It's deeper than what we see from members of Congress. It goes all the way down to the people who stormed the halls of Congress, and I'm not sure how the party overcomes that, and they're not, when I talk to sources in the party.
I mean, the other issue is, even though there are multiple news organizations reporting that members of the president's cabinet have been discussing among themselves invoking the 25th Amendment, because you've got that two-thirds threshold, that if the president challenges it, which, you know, he certainly would, and obviously we know the bar of removal from office is very high. So then the question is, you know, is there really an appetite to fast-track a second impeachment or to pursue in the Congress with 2 weeks left in the administration, essentially removal of the president from authority and Vice President Pence taking over?
Yeah, those are good questions, because you're right. Congress would need to chime in on most, if not all, of the options to get him out of office. No, I do not see an appetite for that right now among the Republicans that you needed to happen. So vast majority of Congress, no. Right now, this is staying in Democratic circles. Very high-level Democrats are calling for it, but it's staying in Democratic circles. I'm watching for some kind of dam breaker to speak out. The only person I could think of that would really make a big difference might be Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. I have absolutely no indication that would happen.
And let me just share the actual quote now from House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Said, if Trump is not removed under the 25th Amendment, Congress may go forward with impeachment. That from House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who is speaking right now. We're also hearing from the nominee for Attorney General in the incoming Biden administration, Merrick Garland. Judge Garland is speaking right now, talking about his priorities in heading up the Justice Department, should he be confirmed by the U.S. Senate. Amber, we also have the actions late yesterday with Twitter putting a 12-hour ban on the account, freezing the Twitter account of President Trump, and then Facebook and its controlled platform Instagram also indefinitely banning the president's accounts, at least until the inauguration. Do we have any indication that the president is looking at alternatives like Parler to get his message out?
I have not heard of that, no, although I wouldn't be surprised, because there have been a number of conservatives in his orbit who have moved over to Parler, which is probably exactly why you mention it. It's kind of the Newsmax of Fox News, if you will, an alternative to something that Trump world doesn't seem, the mainstream outlet doesn't seem conservative enough or supportive of enough of them. My colleagues have reported that the president is extremely frustrated by Facebook and Twitter and their actions. Extremely frustrated, almost so much so that he's focused on that more than what had happened at the Capitol yesterday. And so I wouldn't be surprised if the president found a way to continue to express his voice, especially since that kind of wishy-washy statement he sent out in the wee hours of this morning, kind of sort of acknowledging Biden's win. It also said, like, we're going to continue to make America great again. This is just the start of that. That was him, broadcasting that he really wants to find a way to have a voice going forward.
Amber, thank you for being with us and providing the latest on what's happening in Washington. We wish you a good day.
Oh, thank you. You too.
Thanks, Amber Phillips, political reporter at The Washington Post. And I'd like to hear from you how we move forward. What do you think, for example, with President-elect Biden should be his approach? We just heard his condemnation of what he called a terrorist event yesterday in the siege of the U.S. Capitol. What you think should come out of the events of yesterday and how the nation moves forward? We're at 866-893-5722, 866-893-KPECC. Also, Cabinet Member Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao announcing her resignation, indicating she could not accept the riot that happened yesterday and is leaving the administration just a couple of weeks before the administration turnover in Washington. We'll continue. We'll take your calls. You can also tweet at AirTalk, post on the AirTalk Facebook page, and we'll be speaking with Pepperdine University Dean of the School of Public Policy, Pete Peterson, will be with us momentarily to talk about what Republicans are facing after yesterday's security breach and frightening events at the U.S. Capitol. Back in 1 minute. listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. I'm Larry Mantle. Good to have you with us. Want to hear from you where we go from the events of yesterday so disturbing to us as we saw the crowd break into the U.S. Capitol building and take over the Senate chambers, offices of representatives like House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. The question, what should come next? What do you want to see from Congress? What do you want to see from the president-elect? And what do you want to see from Republicans as they respond to President Trump's actions yesterday? Joining us from Pepperdine University, Dean of the School of Public Policy and Senior Fellow at Pepperdine's Davenport Institute, Pete Peterson. Dean Peterson, good to have you with us again today.
Good to be back, Larry.
Republicans are obviously facing a crisis with deep disturbance at what happened yesterday. Nonetheless, there were House members who attempted to challenge again last night, fully knowing it wouldn't get anywhere. The electoral counts in Pennsylvania, in Arizona. Where does the party go from here?
Well, I think there's obviously a period of real soul searching that's been happening. Obviously, there's been a what's been called a Never Trump movement that has been developing within the Republican Party and more broadly conservative circles for several years. At the same time, the president did receive over 70 million votes about a month and a half ago. And in that, there may be 70 million different reasons why people, Republicans mostly voted for the president. So the period of searching is going to be trying to pull apart what are the policies that remain consistent within Republican and conservative circles that can provide the basis for a political movement, and seeing if there's a way that that can be separated from what is obviously the unstable leadership of the president.
How, though, do you abide what I think to many seem just a nakedly political act on the part of those House members to challenge the Electoral College? You know, and Rand Paul yesterday, the Kentucky senator, said very clearly this is self-defeating for Republicans to do this, not only in the wake of the violence at the Capitol yesterday and the attack, but the fact that the Electoral College is Republicans' best friend. To question the Electoral College vote, to undermine confidence in it, opens the door for Democrats to potentially do away with it. So, I mean, your view of what those members of the House did yesterday?
Well, I think what, let me just first say, I don't abide by it, to answer your question. But secondly, why were these members doing it? They are responding to their own electorates. They are obviously, as you allude to, making political calculations. Now, I think those political calculations are more self-serving than nation-serving. And as you also say, they're not even serving of the broader Republican Party, which benefits and has benefited from the Electoral College. And I think, obviously, there are solid constitutional reasons for maintaining it. But these are people that are elected from districts that are very much what you might call Trumpist or Trumpian. I don't know what the descriptor is in their nature. And in that, these congressmen and women are responding to much more localized and patently political motivations.
And, you know, what about the argument that Republican officials, along with the president, have really unfairly fed supporters of the president a completely false narrative that the election was stolen, that there was wide-scale enough fraud to alter the election in the favor of Joe Biden, and that essentially there were powerful interests that are allied to assure that the president would not be reelected? When supporters are fed that message on a continuing basis, is it a surprise that a subset of those individuals would take the extreme measures they did yesterday, thinking they're defending a system being, you know, stolen from them?
Well, you can't, Larry. You're right. And I would also say, even if your interests were purely political, I think it's very fair to say that the attacks on our election system, in large part, caused the loss of two Republican incumbent Senate seats in Georgia. I don't think that there's really much mystery there, that the constant attacks by the president and others around him on the integrity of the election system, particularly in Georgia, dissuaded Republican voters from voting. And at the same time, connecting it to the violence of yesterday, obviously there's a straight line connection between the conspiracy theories around voting and our broader democratic system and the violence that we saw yesterday.
So, Pete, my question is why, in representing the views of those constituents, why you didn't have Republican office holders saying, look, we weren't happy about the fact that election rules were changed, supposedly because of COVID-19 rules and all the mail-in that went. We're going to work to try and work through state legislatures to change voting laws. We think it, you know, badly disadvantages Republicans. That's a legitimate argument to make. Why not stop there instead of the idea that the whole thing is part of deep machinations to try and get the president and damage Republicans?
Well, there's no good reason not to do that. And I would say that there are many Republicans in Congress. You know, I watched, especially on the Senate side, when you hear a Ben Sasse and a Tim Scott and a Mike Lee and others that were very much attempting to make that case that there is a way of exploring some of these issues around election integrity that don't at all need to stray into the world of basically concocted narratives. But there are those that were frankly elected based on those arguments. And as I've said, I think these are ones that we have ways of holding those people accountable. And at least in Congress, that's only a year and a half or 2 years away. So these are people that are going to have to be held accountable by their voters in their respective districts. I would just say more broadly, as a conservative myself and a Republican, and especially one that's very passionate about issues around civic engagement, that these completely manufactured attacks on our election system are defeating any rational exploration of these issues.
We're talking with Dean of the Pepperdine School of Public Policy, frequent guest with us on Air Talk, Pete Peterson. I want to hear from you where we go from here, what you want to see from Congress, from members of the president's cabinet, from President-elect Joe Biden, 866-893-KPECC, both Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer have come out in saying that if the 25th Amendment is not invoked by members of the president's cabinet and the vice president, they would seek to impeach the president again. We'll talk coming up about the legal issues that raises in a few minutes on Air Talk. Diamond in West Hollywood, good to have you with us. Where do we go?
Hi, I basically feel that we are in a dilemma and we have the 25th Amendment, President Trump, because of the fact that his followers, if we don't do anything, it emboldens his followers further. And if we do something, you know, being that there is Martin Luther King Day and the inauguration coming up, we're equally in danger of his followers committing more violence. So, you know, this morning I called my senators and told them that it's very depressing that we've gotten to this point.
All right, Diamond, I appreciate it. 866-893-KPECC. You can also post on the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. You can tweet at AirTalk or post on the AirTalk page and let us know. Let's see. Joaquin in the Burbs writes on the page, Hawley and Cruz absolutely humiliated themselves last night, trying to thread the needle with their rhetoric even after the riot. Stop indulging these terrorists. Congress. That's Joaquin writing on the page. Norma writes, the president is still saying the election was stolen and was fraudulent. How is that okay? How do people in Congress ignore that? Silas writes, these people should resign. They should join the effort to hold, or shouldn't resign, I'm sorry. Silas said, and I think he's speaking of the cabinet, they should join the effort to hold the president accountable. Bill responds to that, saying, in this case, resigning is the coward's way out. If they were really concerned, they would have either resigned earlier or checked their egos at the door and not accepted a position with this administration. With all of this history, wouldn't they know his loyalty only goes one way? That's Bill in the San Gabriel Valley. 866-893-KPECC. South Bay J writes on the page, the nation has learned over the past few years it's okay to riot with little chance of any legal consequence. Yesterday's events fall right in line with that progression. I have to say, South Bay J, there have certainly been a number of prosecutions that have taken place after the violence that we had here in Southern California. It took a while, using video evidence, to identify individuals who facing some quite serious federal charges for actions that they took that were on the periphery of the peaceful protests in Southern California. 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Let's see. Let's talk with Dennis in Alhambra. Dennis, quick thought from you about where we go now.
Well, I was strategist involved with the 1834-year-old vote with Jerry Brown's second campaign, and I'd like to know, especially conservative guests, why Dean Peterson didn't laser in on the fact of these candidates and these office holders are afraid of Trump's retribution now and especially going forward, because he still will have a significant influence. And I wish you'd hold your guests accountable. That's the obvious. And he didn't go anywhere near that when you asked him.
Well, I think it's so obvious that I thought that was the point that he was making about representing their constituents as well, is that Trump can, turn those people into a very potent force and they can get trumped in primaries. So, Pete, you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, I'm not avoiding that at all. I think that fear of being trumped, well said, Larry, is very much a part of why these congressmen and women are voting and acting the way they are. I think given the events of the last day and really of the last month or so since the election, as I said at the top, that influence that the caller suggests that Trump will have on the future of the party, I think really is draining by the second. It would be very fair to say many people were thinking that Trump may run again in 2024. The actions of yesterday and really of the last few months, I think, make that an extremely remote, if not an impossibility.
Well, here's the other thing. I look at the damage that Trump did to himself in that first presidential debate and the continued erosion from the suburbs where white voters had largely supported him 4 years prior. And we see the damage that's occurring there, to the Republican Party generally, even though there were splits in Orange County, certainly with some going for Republican congressional candidates while voting against Trump and for Biden. But if the members of the House who continue to defend the president here and to claim that the election was stolen along with the president, doesn't that do further damage in those suburban communities that have been bulwarked for Republican candidates?
No, I think it does, and it really is going to be a matter of who is going to step forward to lead the party. You mentioned before the Holly Cruz situations. I think both of them really have damaged, and I think it was a patently obvious set of moves that each one is trying to run forth to pick up whatever mantle Trump has remaining. At the same time, when I look at candidates or possible candidates like a Sass or a Tim Scott, those are the kinds of people that I think really could be coalition builders and return those voters from the suburbs to supporting the Republican Party. So whoever moves forward to claim that mantle is going to help determine the party.
All right. Dean Pete Peterson of Pepperdine University, thank you for joining us again. We appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Larry. Great to be with you.
Thank you, Pete Peterson, Pepperdine University in Malibu, Dean of the School of Public Policy and Senior Fellow at Pepperdine's Davenport Institute. Austin in Laguna Beach says, I talk with my conservative grandmother in Texas on a weekly basis, trying to find common ground. I'm a liberal, Austin says. I think that's the only source of hope for this country. Both my grandmother and I found yesterday's display disgusting. That's Austin in Laguna Beach. We're at 866-893-KPECC coming up. We'll be taking a look at the legal issues raised in potential efforts to impeach President Trump once again or to invoke the 25th Amendment, removing him from office because of the claim that he's not able to execute the duties of the office. We'll talk about the specifics in 90 seconds on Air Talk.